Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to Wes Hodkowitz, and we're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, Packers-Bengals Sunday afternoon at Lambeau, 3:25 p.m. Central Time kickoff. It's another day closer. And the biggest news so far of this week, I guess you'd have to say, is the state of the Packers injury report. They returned to practice on Wednesday afternoon, but no fewer than 13 players listed on the injury report. Some good news, some bad news going on, and we'll get into that. But, man, for week three, it's quite the long list.
It is, especially considering if you go back 2 weeks ago. Now, this is what happens when the NFL season starts. I mean, guys get nicked up, but they were relatively healthy, you know, for the most part, once they got through the final cuts. I mean, what were we talking about? Brian Bulaga was the only one who wasn't practicing.
Yeah.
But through that attrition, you know, once again, injuries are going to happen. The positive side for the Packers, Jordy Nelson, Brian Bulaga were on the practice field, were full participants during Wednesday's practice. And from there, obviously, a lot of just kind of waiting and seeing how this the rest of this is going to shuffle out.
Yeah, and another guy who was back on the practice field, linebacker Ahmad Brooks, who was cleared from his concussion that he sustained in week one against Seattle when he kind of collided face masks almost with Clay Matthews in just kind of a mix-up there in a pass rush situation. But Brooks's return could be fairly timely because Nick Perry's been added to the injury report with a hand injury. Also, Jake Ryan, inside linebacker, added with both a hamstring and concussion. And then we've also seen Montrevious Adams, the rookie, was a full participant in a practice for the first time since he got injured very early in training camp. That also could be very timely because Mike Daniels is not practicing as of now with his hamstring slash hip injury, however that's being classified. So I know that old famous song is something like, "Don't cry for me, Argentina," or whatever. Nobody's going to cry for the Packers here, Wes. This is something they have to get through, and it's not just this week, but they have to deal with two games in a span of 5 days here with this type of injury report. Then you get a little bit of a break because after that Thursday night game, some guys will have some time to recover. But these are two home games against two teams I think the Packers are expecting to beat. The Packers are expecting to be 3-1 at the quarter pole here, but they've got a lot to navigate.
Yeah, they do. And I think the main, if you were just to say the one phrase that probably was the common theme between when Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers both spoke to the media on Wednesday, I really do think it comes back to it's football. And yeah, this is what happens during the course of a football season. You have to adapt. You have to adjust. And that next man up mentality, it's been here in Green Bay for so long. It's what they had to turn to again when you see a guy like Kyle Murphy sliding over to play left tackle last week. Could potentially be there again, depending on what happens with David Bakhtiari, who didn't practice on Wednesday with his hamstring injury. You look at the receivers, where guys like Geronimo Allison, his first game back, Mike, from that suspension, and now he's suddenly on the field for upwards of 20, 30 plays because you don't have Jordy Nelson. Later on, you lose Randall Cobb. So yeah, that's the way this process goes. As I mentioned earlier, the good news for the Packers, the fact that Jordy Nelson being back on the practice field, I think, is a really big thing for them.
Yep.
Just because of how they can use him, how many different holes he can fill in an offense, and then certainly just him as a receiver being able to bring the presence that he does to the football field.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, as we talked about yesterday, not even knowing at that point how many guys were going to be on the injury report, but just how you piece this together for your lineup here in these two games, you know, a Thursday night game coming off of a Sunday game. With all of these injuries, this is going to be tricky, but the Packers have, you know, you mentioned Geronimo Allison. They've also got Trevor Davis and Jeff Janis at wide receiver if Randall Cobb can't go. It looks like, you know, Jordy Nelson said he expects to play, so that's certainly good news. The Packers found out last week they actually have another backup offensive tackle they didn't really know they had in Justin McCray, who did step in for Brian Bulaga on the right side when Kyle Murphy flipped over to the left side. So you start to learn some more things about your team and about just where your 53-man roster stands. Now, I know last week's game in Atlanta didn't go well and the Packers lost, but they were also playing, you know, the defending conference champions on the road in a difficult situation. So hopefully coming back home, they can maybe navigate this injury situation a little bit smoother and still chalk up a victory.
I think it's a great point you raise, because it really does come down to knowing and learning what you don't already know. And, you know, and I had asked Edgar Bennett a little bit about that with Kyle Murphy. When you look at him making his first NFL start at right tackle, a week later he slides over to left tackle for the first time since he was at Stanford. So, I mean, he barely even repped it prior to that week. So
right.
It reminded me a lot of 2012. I even said this during the news conference, of Don Barkley when he had to step in at right tackle after TJ Lang gets injured, after Brian Bulaga gets injured. It was an emergency worst case scenario, and then Barkley ended up being fine and the Packers were able to get through the rest of the season. Obviously, on the offensive line perspective, they're hoping to get David Bakhtiari back sooner than later.
Yep.
All signs and indications based on Brian Bulaga's conversation sounds like he's making progress, and he's feeling like he's nearing a return. So now it really is ultimately about seeing where you're going to be able to get guys back and where you're going to have to pull together and kind of stem the tide until those other starters return.
Yeah, and we'll see if we get any more injury updates before kickoff on Sunday. But with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz over there. Wes, you mentioned it in the last segment. We heard from Aaron Rodgers on Wednesday, and he was talking about the injury situation a little bit, and really the gist of his comments in many ways shows just his competitiveness, his standard of play, his own level of expectation. He's not going to cut himself any slack in terms of his performance when it comes to what the injury situation is around him. And by the same token, whoever steps in, he's going to hold that player to a certain standard. Now, obviously, a backup player is not going to play like a Pro Bowler, but that backup player can't slow everybody down. And that's the point Rodgers was trying to make.
Yeah, I did enjoy Mike McCarthy talked about 15 minutes before Aaron Rodgers on Wednesday and was asked about, you know, if he thought about slowing things down a little bit with the offense, with obviously the injuries they were dealing with. And he basically said, I tried to. and then Rodgers was in some ways a little bit of a bull in a china shop in terms of, as you mentioned, the competitive edge there, the fire burning.
Well, especially when the Packers fell behind.
Exactly.
When they got behind late second quarter and then early third quarter, that's where it was just like, you know, the competitiveness takes over and Rodgers says, I've got to do whatever it takes to try to win this game.
And I think that makes sense, Mike. I mean, you look at, there's no bones about it. I mean, this is the best player on your football team. And when you do have adversity, when you do have a situation where not everybody's available, you turn to that player. And Rodgers, I thought, answered the bell. The problem for them, as we talked about earlier this week, is they just fell a little bit too far in a hole and weren't able to establish that rhythm until, you know, the game was well in hand. So going into this week, though, that's what I want to see be able to carry over. You finished on a high note. You got the offense moving. They found the tempo that they wanted to get. Now can you bring that into and start against what is, as we mentioned yesterday, a pretty darn good Cincinnati Bengals defense? Even if they are 0-2, even if they've had the issues they've had offensively, can Aaron Rodgers, with whoever he has on the offensive line and whoever he has at receiver, get that group together, find that tempo early, and really take control of the football game like they did against the Seahawks?
Yeah, and with respect to Rodgers, and I don't mean to disrespect him at all in saying this, but there are those moments where sometimes his competitiveness, I think, gets the best of him. When you look at the play that ended up being the scoop and score on the fumble, all his offensive linemen are cut blocking. They're trying to chop down the defensive lineman. That ball's got to come out quickly. The play wasn't there, and the competitor in Aaron Rodgers is saying, I've still got to try to make a play. I've got to try to make something happen. And he sets himself up to take that huge hit from Vic Beasley. And that hit could have been far more costly to the Packers than the 7 points that were scored going the other way. So those are the moments where, you know, I mean, I think, you know, everybody, Packers fans, anybody kind of cringes when you see that. And that's just Rodgers' competitiveness, which, you know, it's not just a switch that you can flip on and off. It is who he is. And fortunately, he came out of that hit, those couple of hits that he took in that Falcons game. Okay. He said he's all right going forward.
Yeah. It comes with the purchase. I mean, that's your player. That's your quarterback.
Yep.
That's your leader. And it works, you know, in all those different ways. For his perspective, though, I think people talk about the injury report. They talked about it coming out of the Seahawks game. The fact that Aaron Rodgers wasn't on it in either of those weeks after getting his foot stepped on and his shin, you know, kicked, and then obviously the hit against Beasley, a really good sign for them, because really that's what it comes down to. If you have Rodgers, you have a chance. And the biggest thing is, and even Brian Bulaga was talking about this a little bit, it's about giving him kind of that manageable pocket and allowing him to operate. I think for the most part, Murphy and Patrick, McCray helped accomplish that. Unfortunately, there are those small plays you want to have back, and that one play in particular ends up turning into, you know, 7 points.
Yeah, and this is the type of game. I mean, we talked all offseason long about this tough start for the Packers, the Seahawks and the Falcons right out of the gate, these big quarterback matchups, you know, Rodgers against Wilson, Rodgers against Ryan. Well, now the quarterback matchup is Aaron Rodgers against a quarterback who's struggling, a guy who's proven himself right in the past. But Andy Dalton is off to a slow start, and really this game in many senses probably comes right down to the fact that if the gap between Aaron Rodgers' performance and Andy Dalton's is big enough, the Packers should win the game regardless of who's on the field.
Right. That's the old Dom Capers adage. You know, if you look at the passer ratings, if you win the passer rating battle, in most cases you're going to end up winning the ball game. And for Rodgers' perspective, he's going, as we mentioned, you know, he's going for 31 now. I mean, this is the only team in the NFL he has yet to beat in his NFL career. I think he's only had, what, one or two shots at it. But still, you know, he has that little bit of carrot out there, although he also joked, you know, when he met with the media this past week that, you know, there's a couple instances over the years where he maybe beat the Packers as well. But I'll tell you what, if you're starting quarterback for 9-10 years and you have a couple instances where you hurt your team, that's a pretty good ratio.
Yeah, I would say so. But we'll shift gears here after the break and talk a little bit of Packers defense. Back with that on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, we've talked about him a little bit already this week, and that's rookie cornerback Kevin King. But it's worth revisiting or reigniting the discussion, because you were part of a conversation with some other reporters at his locker on Wednesday, and you got a little bit of insight into his psyche, into his makeup, in terms of what he was thinking when he's thrown out there on the field against Atlanta and he's lined up across from Julio Jones. How did he discuss that?
It was really interesting, and to be perfectly honest with you, I said this to some of the other beat writers afterwards. That was his most introspective, I think, of as a conversation I've had with not only a cornerback, but maybe a player since Tremont Williams was here. Tremont Williams did that a lot. You could really, you know, get a really good indication of what his thought process is going into a football game and what he's thinking when he's going up against a particular receiver. But with King, we're talking about a 22-year-old rookie here. We're talking about a guy that had played 6 defensive snaps in the NFL, and he's sitting there on the sideline saying, hey, put me on Julio, put me on Julio. to him, and this is, it's such a very interesting comment, he looks at all those guys as just faceless receivers. It doesn't matter what the nameplate says. It doesn't matter what they've accomplished. He has respect for all of them, but he has to do his job. And understanding and hearing that confidence and where that comes from with him just was really enlightening. And one of the things he said it starts with is with his family and his upbringing and the understanding that if you put the work in, if you're prepared, you're going to have confidence. You're going to be able to do well. And for 3 hours when he's out there, that's the only thing he can do. That's the only thing he can control. He doesn't control all Julio Jones plays on a given play. He doesn't control whether or not A.J. Green catches a ball. What he does control is whether or not he can make a play on that ball. And once the Packers put him in the game and he ended up playing 46 defensive snaps against the Falcons, I think Julio Jones ended up having one catch in the second half. I don't even know how they figure that out in terms of who that goes against. But
right.
I think Kevin King was a big part of the Packers being able to solve some of those deep crossing routes and really using his strength, his size, and his speed to limit some of those opportunities downfield.
Yeah, you definitely had to like what you saw out of King in Atlanta, and certainly seeing his defensive snaps go from so few against Seattle to so many just from 1 week to the next, and the fact that he performed the way he did is a really good sign. And it will be very interesting to see now come Sunday afternoon against the Bengals. You've got A.J. Green, one of the top receivers in the league, is a 6-time Pro Bowler, yeah. I think.
Every year he's been in the league, he's been in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is a big-time receiver. And then actually one of King's former teammates he also could be lined up against on Sunday, and that's the speedster John Ross from Washington, who was a top 10 draft pick. Ninth overall pick. So some interesting potential matchups here now for King in a game where, with all the attention that's been on him this week, the spotlight is going to be even bigger in many ways than it was Sunday night in Atlanta.
Yeah, and it was funny, too, hearing him talk about Ross, because he wouldn't give too much insight into what their banter is like. You know, when they talk as friends. They don't talk as receiver and cornerback. But he did mention, I mean, this is a guy that broke the combine record. What was it, 4.22 in the 40?
Yeah, 4.22.
King said in their room they have him down as 4.15. So, I mean, you might as well put him down as 3.99. I mean, they are ready for this guy's speed. And it was interesting, too, because he talked about how when he was in college, I mean, he would watch guys, specifically linebackers, if there was a mismatch, you know, basically pop their hamstrings trying to stay stride for stride with him just because this guy was so fast. So whether it's Ross, who by the way, he has one catch in the NFL so far, so it's not like, you know, he's being used, you know, exclusively yet. But they're ready for that. He's ready for A.J. Green, whatever the Bengals throw at them, because even though this is sort of a slow offense in terms of how they've been able to get things going, everybody in that defensive room is they see a beast in the waiting here. You know, it's lying dormant for these first 2 weeks, but it's still there. You know what A.J. Green can do if you let him get going.
Oh, yeah.
So the key for King and the rest of these cornerbacks is being able to contain that. The Packers were without Devon House in practice on Wednesday, so it remains to be seen what his situation will be with the quadriceps injury. But as King showed, if he needs to be in there, if you need to throw him out there, he's going to give you a solid performance and going to give you everything he's got.
Wow, 4.15. I think I could run a 4.15 in the 20-yard. That boggles my mind. Honestly, that boggles my mind. 4.15.
Did you guys do a test at all for the 40 when you're at Lawrence? Is that?
No, we did. I was on the baseball team, so we did home to first. We got timed home to first. I did break 4 seconds home to first.
There you go. So maybe you got him in that competition.
Yeah, well, I doubt it. But with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford next to Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, before we go today, I think there's one element or maybe one play in particular from the game last Sunday night in Atlanta that we probably didn't give it its due. And the one I'm talking about is the 4th and 7 from the 33-yard line and that touchdown pass from Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams down the sideline. That was a heck of a throw, a heck of a catch. And, you know, you hope it's certainly just the sign of potentially another big year to come here for Devontae Adams. But I think it's also a reflection of some of the things we talked about with Adams. And you wrote a story a week or so ago on our website about how Adams really focused on his conditioning. He slimmed down, he trimmed down a little bit in terms of his overall weight. And I asked him about it on Wednesday in the locker room about that catch relative to sort of his new physique. And he didn't go so far as to say, well, yeah, that's a play I wouldn't have made last year when I was 15 pounds heavier or whatever. But he did say it certainly didn't hurt to feel like he had that extra little burst and extra explosiveness to try to go get a ball that was way out in front of him.
Yeah, exactly, Mike. And this is something, too, that you got to remember. This is the second half. The Packers, you know, they'd gone through some ups and downs there early. And really, for how often the Packers deploy those top three receivers, it's a long game, especially when you get upwards of 70 plays. And that was one of the motivating factors for Adams when he went through this process, was understanding he needed to be the same player he is on the first snap as the last one, because a lot of times the last one's the more important play. So he's been making these type of catches. You think about Philadelphia last year. You know, that's nothing new from that front, but what impressed me about it is he even said after, you know, he lost track of the ball for a second in the lights, as we were talking about last week in terms of getting used to that in a new stadium.
Sure.
But was able to track it, kept his left foot in bounds so it hit the pylon rather than stepping out of bounds, and then had such great body control. His instincts, there's so many things that separate him as a receiver. He has the footwork, he has the athletic ability, he has the vertical. But his instincts are unparalleled, and that's the one thing. When you look at the common thread between all these receivers in Green Bay, it's been those instincts. It's been Jordy Nelson making the plays he did on the sideline for so many years, and in those, you know, sports science type catches. It's Randall Cobb knowing where the defender is going to be and how to make him miss.
Yeah.
And Adams fits right into that. And again, it was just a remarkable catch at an important time for them, because I think that was a play that really told the Packers, all right, we can still do this.
Yeah, and it was funny because I watched it, and I think it was an NFL.com video during the week that had, you know, the top five catches from week two, and Adams' catch wasn't on there, and I'm sure it wasn't on there because the Packers were so far behind at the time, and it was the fourth quarter. But that catch was better than at least three of the ones that were on the top five video. I mean, I thought it was just a tremendous play. And now we have to see going forward, you know, Randall Cobb did not practice on Wednesday. We did talk about the good news with Jordy Nelson. So maybe, you know, some more falls on Devontae Adams here if Cobb is unable to play. We know that Geronimo Allison is available, so, you know, are Trevor Davis and Jeff Janis. But Adams is one of these guys who's developing that chemistry with Aaron Rodgers that we saw several years ago start to come along with Jordy Nelson and players like that. I think Adams is starting to get there with his quarterback, and I would expect the Packers to try to put that to good use.
Entirely different player from Randall Cobb in terms of their skill sets and what they bring to the table on the field, but their mindset and their maturity at a really young age reminds me a lot of each other. That was the one thing, you know, Cobb came into the league at 20 years old.
Right.
Devontae comes to the league, I believe it was 21. He won't turn, I think, 25 until Christmas Eve. So, but yet he's accomplished so much of this league. And you saw him become the veteran that he was last year and stepping up in some really key situations, particularly in the red zone, which led to him getting 12 touchdown passes. So, yeah, depending on what happens with Cobb, what his availability is, depending on if, you know, even if Jordy Nelson plays, if they have to be cautious with him at all, the Packers know they have Devontae Adams. And when you have those three receivers, that tandem, that trio, it gives Aaron Rodgers a lot of weapons and this offense a lot of weapons to utilize.
Yeah, and we saw Devontae Adams have one of those breakout type of games last year on a Thursday night against Chicago. So that one's coming up, and maybe that's the game that he busts out this year. So
totally
we'll see.
Possible.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.